Welcome to Crypto Biz, the Business of Crypto podcast. Keith Allen, Brad Nickel, and Austin Gaines ready to talk the business of cryptos and ICOs. What we are not here to do is talk about crypto trading. We're talking business today. And before we dive into today's subject, Brad, how about a quick rundown on who we are?
Who we are? Black Knox. Black Knox is a ICO and cryptocurrency advisory firm. What that means is we help ICOs succeed and we help cryptocurrencies with their strategy, their marketing, their technology, and getting to market and doing better.
We actually also even work with post-ICO cryptos and help with marketing. And
I think that's what I said.
Austin. This is why we don't go live.
Tell us what we can't say.
Austin.
We can't do. We are not financial advisors, attorneys, or tax advisors. We do not want you guys to take anything we're saying as investment advice. And please be careful when you invest in cryptocurrency. It is a risky business. Just be ready to lose whatever you put into it.
So, read an article that was referencing all the places that are now cracking down on cryptos. You want to run through that really quick, or you want to dive into more meat of today's?
Yeah, let's go ahead and check them out.
Okay. So this actually appeared in time.com money section. You can find this article, and it is called All the Places Now Cracking Down on Bitcoin and Cryptocurrencies, which is what I'm referencing for this. This is like 10 places that are all cracking down. China obviously has been in the news quite a bit. They're focusing a crackdown on exchanges, online platforms, and ICOs. This is, you know, Beijing's kind of been leading the all-out assault on cryptos from the start. And the Chinese government has outlawed ICOs and crypto exchanges within their borders, trying to get a handle on crypto trading. But we know that Chinese are still participating heavily in cryptos. They're just no longer able to host exchanges and online platforms and ICOs there. Mining has been a bit of an issue. And as prices dipped pretty severely this week, there was a lot of discussion of whether even Bitcoin mining was still a profitable proposition. Well, those numbers are coming back up. But of course, there are thousands of other coins out there, not just Bitcoins, that are being mined. And Washington State has been a place where miners have been flocking to because of the low cost of power in, I think it's Chelan County, Washington, which is right near a hydroelectric dam on the Columbia River. They've now imposed a one-year ban on mining activity in residential areas because of the power it's been demanding and how that is affecting resources for the local community. So I believe there's still some commercial property that's available for that use, but they're trying to get a handle on how this is being used, and they've imposed a one-year ban on mining in residential areas. Russia, who knows what's happening in Russia, there's a lot of ideas coming out of Russia.
Putin worried about laundering funds through cryptocurrency.
Right,
that exactly. Is Putin, irony of all ironies.
Putin, who was in an article this week highlighted as the richest man in the world, they think, but nobody really knows. Focus on cryptocurrency use, saying that you could not use cryptos to buy goods and services in Russia. Now, there's been talk recently about whether Russia was going to launch their own cryptocurrency to help their horrible financial situation that they are in and create a new currency that they could trade on. But
all transaction fees go to my wallet.
That's right. Putin is going to go to Vladimir's Coinbase.
Transaction fees are 1.9%. That's still less than Stripe and PayPal.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens there. But it has not seemed to slow down the flow of proposed ICOs coming out of that region.
No, it hasn't. But look, in the article, what stood out to me for the Russia part is there's a sentence there. It says, last year, it also blocked access to websites of cryptocurrency exchanges that offered dubious coinage. And so we've seen what we've seen come out of Russia. And, you know, that dubious coinage is coming straight from them. You know, so like, that's what jumped out at me. I mean,
Yeah.
That's the one that got me on Russia. Like, they're doing this, but yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah.
That one, Russia part, I don't get.
I don't know if you guys saw the article. This is like a story like 2 weeks ago or something. A fisherman off the coast of Russia hooked into something. You know, he thought it was big, and then he realized it was an object, not a fish, because it wasn't fighting. And it turns out to be this big bag, and he thinks it's going to be a bag of money or a bag of drugs. And he gets the bag to the boat, and he opens it up, and it has 52 hands in it. And yes, 52 severed hands. And the Russian government said, "Oh, it was probably just poorly disposed of biomedical waste."
That was the guy in the butcher shop we talked to.
That was the guy who tried to. that was 26 people who tried to pay with Bitcoin.
They just tried to shake his hand.
Yeah, that's right.
He was trying to take
germophobic. South Korea has been off and on, right? Like back in January, they said.
The guy died that was making it off, so now they're back on.
I think two of his hands may have been in that bag in Russia. actually, I don't know that.
The guy trying to dig up the anonymous cash.
I don't know that for sure. That's completely not true. But but he did pass away.
Can we just do a crypto news segment? Like, that's our whole podcast instead. It's a lot more fun.
We could. Yeah, it is pretty interesting.
We could make fun of people all day, right? I mean, we're good at that.
We could be the Colbert of cryptos.
There you go.
So South Korea has been going back and forth a little bit on exchanges and trading. Where are they this week? probably someplace different than they'll be next week. We'll just have to keep watching that. But South Korea is a pretty significant market in the space.
Yeah, they are. They're giant. The fans in South Korea are huge. They're active. They're engaged. They invest in every ICO that comes down the pike, including the Russian butcher shop. They are avid crypto fans, and I think they fear pitchforks and rioting in the streets if they cut it off. So, and you know, the guy that cut it off is dead, so who knows?
Hawaii. Cracking down on exchanges. Well, not necessarily cracking down.
Not a country. We know it's not a country.
I didn't say it was a country.
No, I'm just telling our listeners that, well, you know.
So it's not that they are cracking down. It's that they're making policies that are making it impossible for exchanges to do business there. Last year, the Hawaii Division of Financial Institutions implemented a policy requiring crypto-related companies to keep liquid cash reserves equal to the dollar value of all Hawaiian customers' crypto holdings. In other words, if Hawaiians collectively held 1,000 bitcoins, the company would have to keep, you know, the cash equivalent of that on hand. So that, for example, for Coinbase to exit Hawaii, we'll have to see if anything changes. Sounds like Hawaii is reconsidering the requirement, see if they can get back in the game here. We'll see what
That didn't take long for them to think.
Yeah.
They kind of messed that one up.
Yep. Yeah. You know, listen, you want people to be warned of the risks. There's no question about that, but you also don't want to eliminate individuals' opportunity to capitalize, right? Morocco cracking down on crypto use. Back in November, Morocco's central bank told businesses that it was illegal to accept virtual currencies punishable by fines.
All right.
You think about that.
That's so hand. Many people are right now accepting it as a currency, you know, across the world, that they just came out with a statement for the sake of saying something.
Well, no, they actually did. They did it right after the first company tried to accept Bitcoin within the country.
And look, the powers that be are making cash on their existing currencies, so they don't want anybody else making their cash. You know, they can't control it. That's the whole point.
Plattsburgh, New York, also a crackdown on mining, similarly to what is happening in Washington. Miners are flocking to the area because of the low cost of power. And now there's...
Why do they have low cost of power there, I wonder?
In New York?
I wonder, is it hydro?
I know Washington was. It doesn't really say about New York.
I don't know. I read another article on that previously last week, so I could go back and reference it if you really care.
I'm kind of curious, but no, really don't care that much.
I'll send you the link in Telegram.
Thanks.
And we'll post it somewhere.
Oh, speaking of Telegram.
Yes.
Join us at t.me/BlackKnox. And if you want to talk about your white paper, t.me/CryptoBiz.
Okay.
That was a
thank plug. You. Thank you for that. Shameless plug.
Timely.
Quebec. Also with a crackdown on mining. So apparently all these municipalities are realizing that miners are taking advantage of their low cost of power. So, you know, probably they're going to look at a way to tax them and charge them more money and then, you know, start making money again, right?
Yeah, if I had a heating and air conditioning company in those areas, I would just install them and tell them it's their new heater. It's a new small heater for their house. There you
go. Here's a small heater called the mining rig. Nepal also cracking down on mining. Washington, D.C., general oversight. What could that mean, right? I don't think anybody is fearing an outright crypto ban in the U.S., but obviously the SEC is watching very closely, a lot of posturing. Not enough action, quite honestly. Yes, there have been subpoenas, you know, filed for some shady behavior and Ponzi schemes and bad actors, and I would expect that to continue and hope it does. But in terms of actually managing and regulating the space, we've yet to see the kind of defined policy that the industry is anxiously awaiting.
Yeah, you know who's anxiously awaiting them to wanting them to focus on cryptocurrency? All the guys who are ready to scam in the stock market. I just saw a thing the other day that said that there are 4,000 total staff in the SEC compared to the Department of Justice at 110,000 and the Department of Homeland Security at, I think they said 300,000. So you think about the allocation of 4,000 employees, probably what percentage of those are investigators and prosecutors, and you've got a lot of ground to cover. I don't think they have the staff to do this. I don't know how they get anything done, frankly.
So let's dive into what we intended to discuss today. And if we hadn't mentioned that near the top of the show, we probably should have. But one of the things that we see with our clients and even just prospects in general on a regular basis, daily basis, several times a day basis, is a lack of understanding of what it really takes to go from concept to token. The ICO process is a little bit more complex than your average startup. And so we've kind of honed a timeline and a process for taking those concepts from white paper, and in some cases, not even white paper, onto and through a successful ICO. So this is going to end up being a multi-episode subject because we're going to take you through the whole timeline here before it's all said and done. But Brad, why don't you kick off how the process typically starts and where we take it from there?
Okay. I think we're going to need a little intro music and we'll go how to ICO. Thank you very much. That's exactly what I had in mind. How to ICO. Look, we have these questions constantly. And if you join our Telegram group, we'll be very happy to provide you with an overview of the timeline that we use for our clients so they can get an idea of how this whole process works.
Give us that Telegram group again, Brad.
That Telegram group is t.me/cryptobiz. t.me/cryptobiz. Visit that link in your browser and you can connect with us, or you can see us @cryptobiz. All right. So first thing is your concept and idea, right? We know you're not going to come out and try to do an ICO just because you want to make some money or raise some money, right? The whole purpose of this is, do you have a concept or idea that is well served by the technology known as blockchain? Does it have a need for a distributed ledger? Does it have a need for a peer-to-peer network? Does it have a need for a token and cryptocurrency within the concept of the business? So those are one of the first questions we get to with our clients. Is this of value, or should you just be receiving money the old-fashioned way? And that's one of the first things. Austin, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we just got to make sure that blockchain's become like this buzzword for a lot of companies. And when you come to us and when you want to start an ICO, we just need to make sure that you have a way to implement the blockchain into your product that, like Brad said, is actually needed. You know, raising money for an ICO, if you're not going to utilize the blockchain technology, can get very tricky. And, you know, with the issues with the SEC, it's not the best route to go. You know, there's still traditional ways to raise funds, you know, and capital that you could take advantage of.
Right. And, you know, even if you don't have a solid grasp on the best use of blockchain, we can certainly help you with that. But, you know, we just got off a call where the, you know, client asked us to really, you know, kind of spearhead that and help them figure it out and understand the best use. But you've got to have really a legitimate, innovative, you know, enterprise level application to make this something scalable and justify that this is why you're using blockchain. The days of just, you know, cranking out a white paper, having an ICO and raising tens of millions of dollars for some arbitrary project, that ship has sailed. SEC and other regulators around the world, for that matter, are looking for those.
Yeah, and you'll get shredded in the public crypto world, right? I mean, there's a purpose here. Certainly, you can still go out and have a coin and be a security and raise money and not have anything to do with the blockchain, but we don't want to work with you, and the world of crypto probably doesn't want to work with you. So, you know, really fit what you're doing and your business model into and make use of, to the benefit of you and your end users and your product, the blockchain. That's the real bottom line there.
I was going to say, you can be a startup. It's okay to be a startup that's starting from scratch, but you know, there needs to be some additional skin in the game, and there needs to be some maybe additional, more traditional fundraising to get the ball rolling for your concept. And of course, existing businesses, we love existing businesses because there's already proof of a solid business model there and a solid team, hopefully, in place, so that you are, you know, in terms of selling that and pitching that to other potential investors or users, you already have a baseline there and some validation for what your business is capable of and what your team is capable of. So that really is something that I think investors value a lot, is seeing that there's some existing history there with the business. And, you know, especially, of course, if there's customers and recurring revenue that already exists.
Yep. And then here's, you know, one of the things you need to get to is, Keith was just talking about, is really what are the benefits of what you are doing to a customer? Who is your customer? What are they going to gain from what you are offering as a business or as a project? The only differentiator here are if you're a pure kind of new kind of blockchain technology product, then, you know, it's obvious that you're going for people that will utilize this in some way in their business or in technology or in general as a cryptocurrency, and that can be defined. And you still have to think about the customers and their benefits. But that ties into a business plan.
Wait, but before you get there, Brad, just in terms of benefits that you're talking about, you know, and again, this is top of mind because we just got off of a call discussing this. So you may be thinking that, hey, maybe this is here's an angle for us to integrate the blockchain or integrate blockchain technology. Well, if you already have a process in place that's working really, really well, then if you're going to try and transition into a blockchain product for that process, to manage that process or execute that process, it needs to work better than the one that already exists. In the case of the call that we just got off with the client we got off the phone with, they had a great process in place. It was working very well for them. So in order to even consider transitioning that into a blockchain usage, they need to define a way, maybe define what the problems are, the holes in the existing system, and figure out a way to make something that improves on what's already there. If you're not improving on what's already there, then essentially you are not helping your customer. You're not creating a more valuable, more productive experience for the end customer, and it's not going to be accepted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, speaking of some good lessons, when we were just advising startups in the typical equity fashion over the last several years, one of the things that was always a pain point for them was the idea of writing a business plan. And we understand it's not an easy task. It's not necessarily a fun task, but it's a critical task. And often entrepreneurs and project leaders think that writing a business plan is about selling the business to an investor, but that's not the primary purpose of the business plan. The primary purpose of the business plan is for you to find out what is wrong with your concept, what is wrong with your strategies, or what you can do to improve your ideas. And a business plan and financial projections force you through that process so that you can get a better understanding of what your business needs and how it needs to function. So we tell every client we work with, that at the very least, you need to work through kind of a fundamentals level executive summary and full financial projections of what the business is going to be and do for you, because otherwise you're not going to be successful in executing on the business. So we had an example of that recently on a call with a couple of prospective clients, really smart guys, really strong professionals, have a really well thought out concept, really well thought out plan, but
good white paper.
Yeah, good white paper, but they had no idea financially how the business was going to sustain itself, and they had no idea how much time it was going to take, nor how long it was going to take to develop their platform. And so, you know, we had one of those calls where we had to kind of reset their expectations and let them know that one of the first things they've got to do is put together the components of a good business plan so that it forces them to think through the big issues on timing and strategy and customers and financials and understand how much they really need and what they need to actually succeed. So we highly recommend that in the process.
And part of that discussion was understanding what their own bandwidth was, because as is the case with so many startups, they were all working full time on other jobs. And, you know, when the funding is right or when the business is right, we're going to start to transition over to this. But that was the need to have somebody committing the time and to be at the helm of the company was going to come a lot sooner than they had realized, I think. And so when it comes to your own plan, you need to be thinking, you know, in advance of what it's going to take. Because if this is your side hustle, that's all good, right? We've all been in the startup world, and we've all done that on multiple occasions. But this process moves very, very fast, right? From the start of getting your materials in place and your white paper and your website and your business plan and all of those components in place to private sale, pre-sale, and public sale, and done, is, you know, typically about a four month to maybe 6 months max process. And so if you're thinking that you're going to transition from what you're doing eventually after a year or so, or when it's funded, you might need to rethink that, or at least have your eye on some candidates who might be able to step in and take that role before you're able to fully transition.
And these guys were professionals, right? That had spent a fortune on school and were launching their careers and, you know, basically were telling them, you don't get to be that anymore.
Yeah, if you want to do X, your career path is going to change immediately.
Right.
But Keith, you touched on a good point. And the ICO process is extremely fast moving. It's much quicker and much more intense than raising your regular equity round, you know, in traditional ways. So when you're putting together your business plan, you have to take that into consideration and know that for the next 4 months, you're going to have to be 100% on the ball because things move extremely quick.
Yeah, you've got no life.
You have no life. You have to have all your information, you know, ready to go. You don't really have the chance to change things on the fly, you know, because the integration of how the technology works and what you're going to be building up to in a 4 month period, you don't have the reset button. You know, sometimes in a regular equity round, an idea can come up and you can say, okay, we can re-strategize and, you know, come back at it.
Well,
this process doesn't really work like that.
No, I mean, listen, there are things that you can, that you may have to rethink or approach from a different perspective along the way as, you know, variables present themselves. However, I will say that this is not something where you can create what you need on the fly. You need to be prepared, staged, and ready to go because it moves at lightning speed.
So that's why these three steps are so important, from, you know, the concept to the business plan. And the next thing we'll get into is the white paper, you know, to have all that stuff ready to go before you start the process is critical for you.
Yep.
At least, you know, the first two, and the white paper will come after. You'll have an idea moving through them. But I mean, that's critical to your success in this.
Totally agree. And it's just a massive undertaking. We're here to help. That's what we do. But you're basically launching an entire multi-million dollar product in a very tight window of time. And that's not an easy thing to do. So it's doable. It's just not easy.
For sure.
So that'll take us to our next episode where we're going to cover white paper and team and start getting into the steps before your private sale. And you may not even have known you had one, but it's coming. So we'll carry that over to the next episode. What do you think, Keith?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. White paper, yeah. We could go on for quite some time. That's a good idea. We'll move white paper to the next episode.
Excellent.
So we certainly have more to come, but we also would like to know what specifically you would like to hear on the Crypto Biz podcast. If you've got a topic you want us to cover, or you simply have questions about startups, ICOs, blockchain, or anything related to the crypto industry, ping us on Telegram at CryptoBiz. If you would like to submit a white paper for our review, you can hit us up at blacknox.com. For Brad Nickel and Austin Gaines, I'm Keith Allen. Thanks for joining us on CryptoBiz, the Business of Crypto podcast.